Welcome, everybody. It's nice to see everybody on Erev Yontif, but since people are having less guests than they would normally have, maybe it makes it a little bit easier, but pleasure to see everybody. Okay, what I want to do today is speak a little bit about the mitzvah shofar Rosh Hashanah, and then discuss, of course, the very difficult practice that we have not to blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, which is, of course, that's been doing that for 2,000 years, but it's a very difficult practice. Okay, so we'll start. Rosh Hashanah is the least, most mysterious holiday in the Torah. We know why we eat matzah, we know why we sit in the sukkah, we know why we fast on Yom Kippur, all that's explained in Torah. We know why we bring new wheat on Shavuot, that's all that's mentioned in Torah on Shavuot. The Korban HaOmer, who brought on Pesach, then the Shtei Alechem on Shavuot. But we really have no idea why we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. The Torah doesn't give us any indication. And Rosh Hashanah is only mentioned twice in the entire Torah. It's mentioned in Parshat Emor, and it's mentioned in Parshat Pinchas. That's it. It's Parshat Emor with all the holidays. Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the seventh month. It's Zichron Truah. And Rosh Hashanah in Bamidbar, where we mention all the sacrifices that are brought on the biblical holidays with the Korban Musaf. So it says it's a Yom Teruah, which of course we'll get back. That's a well-known, sort of what the difference is between a Zichron Teruah, a remembrance or mentioning, and a Yom Teruah. So we don't really know why we observe Rosh Hashanah. I don't know if anybody wants to pipe in. So most people will say, well, it's the creation of the world. It's very nice, but that's nowhere recorded in the Torah. And of course, it's a debate. I'm sure many people are aware that there's a debate in the Talmud whether the world was created in Nisan or Tishrei. The whole debate's a strange debate. Who cares? We weren't around. We don't know what. There's no practical implications. We actually assume the world was created in Nisan every 28 years. If you remember, the least cited bracha in Jewish liturgy is every 28 years we say the bracha on the sun, right? The fourth of Nisan, whatever. And that's obviously assuming that's when the sun comes back to its we presume the sun comes, if you assume the world, it takes 365 and a quarter days exactly, which of course isn't true. So then every 28 years, because it's 6 hours a year. So after 28 years, the sun will be back in the original spot. So every 28 years, we make the bracha, and we do that in Nisan. That assumes the world was created in Nisan. That's a debate in the Talmud. The Torah doesn't tell us anything about creation. And the truth of the matter is the one pasuk we have, the pasuk says, Tiku b'chodesh shofar, you should blow the shofar in the month, b'kesa liyom chagena, when it's hidden, l'chasot, when it's hidden. And in many ways, we'll say that's the idea. We don't mention Rosh Chodesh on Rosh Hashanah. That's the moon is, we can barely see the moon. It's not like all the other holidays, which are pretty much on the 15th of the month, right? Pretty much every Jewish holiday is either on the 15th of the month or in the first half of the month. Sukkot, Pesach, Tu Bishvat, Tu B'Av, Purim, Shavuot is in the first half of the month. Because the 15th, of course, is a full moon. The Jewish people are compared to the moon. The moon is the first mitzvah. But the first day of the month, you really can't see the moon very much. So the question is, why are we blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah? And how in the world did Rosh Hashanah become Yom HaDin, the day of judgment? So the simple explanation is that the reason we have a holiday on the first day of the seventh month is because seven is a, you want to call it a holy Jewish number. Seven is the number of the complete cycle in Judaism. It's there's seven, of course, the seventh day is Shabbat, and the seventh year is Shemitah, and after 49 years you have the Yovel, and there's our Sheva Brachot, and Rachman Litzan, 7 days of Shiva. Seven represents a cycle, 7 days of Pesach, 7 days of Sukkot, 7 weeks, seven times 7 weeks of the holiday of Shavuot. So the only thing missing is the seventh month. We don't have anything on the seventh month. So presumably Rosh Hashanah is a celebration of the seventh month. We blow the shofar to commemorate, to announce that this is the seventh month. We have seven for everything else. Now, by the way, it's interesting to note that seven is a made-up number. What do I mean by that? In other words, we understand why the lunar month is 29 or 30 days, because it takes the moon 29 and a half days to circle the Earth. So therefore, a lunar month is every, you know, 29 or 30 days. We understand why a year is 365 days, because it takes a year for the Earth to circle the sun. Now, why a week is 7 days, there's no reason for a week to be 7 days. I mean, I know that sounds weird to us. Can you imagine? I mean, a week, eight, all I say is thank God. The secular week isn't 8 days. Boy, would that mess up. Taking off on Shabbos. Thank God the world adopted the notion, Judaism brought the notion of Shabbat, of the weekend into the world. Boy, would that mess us up. But there's no real reason that a week has to be 7 days. And there have been attempts in history. There was a few months ago, an article, I think, in the Globe and Mail, somebody was writing, why don't we, you know, have a 10-day week? You know, different ideas. So the simple idea is seven is the number that we creation of the world and Shabbat. If I'm not mistaken, Jonathan Sachs in his introduction to one of his, either the Siddur, the Muxer, I'm not sure where, discusses that in the ancient world, they had a world revolving on the number six. And this could be seven is sort of a response to that number. But anyways, the first idea of Rosh Hashanah is that it's the first day of the seventh month. There is no other reason, and the Torah doesn't give us any reason. It's nothing to do with creation of the world or anything like that. Now, we know that Rosh Hashanah, and presumably the blowing of the shofar heralds the coming of Yom Kippur and Sukkot. In other words, the seventh month is a special month. Seven is special. What's special about the seventh month? Not Rosh Hashanah. What's special about the seventh month is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the day of atonement, and Sukkot, the day of celebration, Chag. When we talk about holiday, Chag, that's always a reference to the holiday of Sukkot. So Rosh Hashanah is basically, presumably, is an announcement. That's what we know in the Torah. We actually know very little. Now, let me share my sheet a little bit just to point out, share my screen. Let's go here. Okay. Okay, so everybody can see the sheets okay? Hope so, yeah, okay. All right, so here you have the two sources, B'chodesh HaShvi'i B'chad L'chodesh Zichron Trua, and then you have in Shmot, B'chodesh HaShvi'i Kom Alachalot Tasu Yom Trua Yelachem. Now, the mitzvah of shofar, actually you'll notice that there is no mention of shofar by Rosh Hashanah. It's Yom Teruah, but we don't really know what a Yom Teruah is or a Zichron Teruah. The mitzvah of shofar is mentioned twice in the Torah. Once by the Yovel year, that's the next source. V'sapartu lecha sheva shabtot shanim, sheva shanim, sheva pamim, v'yu lecha sheva shabtot shanim, teisha varvim shana. You should count seven times 7 years, very much like the Sfiras Omer. Instead of 7 days, 7 weeks, here it's 7 years, seven times, have 49 years. V'avart the shofar trua b'chodesh hashvi. You should blow the shofar trua on the seventh month, besor l'chodesh. On the 10th of the month, Yom Kippur, that's when we blow shofar. The other mention of shofar in the Torah is by Har Sinai, that when the Jewish, v'ahiva yom hashlishi, when the Jewish people came to Mount Sinai, so there was a thunder and lightning. B'chol shofar chazek ma'od. The sound of the shofar was very thick, was very loud. So now, by the way, it's interesting. According to the rabbis, the Har Sinai, the giving of the Torah took place on Shabbat. So like the blowing of the shofar in the Torah took place on Shabbat. But of course, there's no mention there of Rosh Hashanah, and shofar is not mentioned in Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rosh Hashanah appears, I don't think I brought the pasuk in, but Rosh Hashanah appears only once in the in Tanakh. The actual words, Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, appears only once in Tanakh, and that's in Sefer in Yechezkel, where Rosh Hashanah is, again, the 10th of the month. The 10th of the 7th month is Yom Kippur, clearly linking it to Yovel. It's on the 10th of the month. It's on Yom Kippur of Yovel that slaves go free. officially. They don't go free till Yom Kippur. And when there was Yovel, there hasn't been Yovel in about 2,600 years, 2,700 years. But when there was Yovel, they used to daven, I don't know, back then, but in theory, we do like Malchut Zichronot and Shofar. They blow the 100 kol out of the Shofar, like all the way we blow Shofar on Rosh Hashanah was done on the Yovel year. So you see already the Yovel has the beginning. It's a new cycle after 50 years. And that was, that's the really the only two times that the Shofar is mentioned in the Torah. Now, I'll just say, the only other time Rosh Hashanah, not as a, the name Rosh Hashanah, but as a holiday is mentioned anywhere in the Chumash is in the book of Nehemiah, when Ezra comes back to the land of Israel, beginning of the Second Temple period. It's a disaster. Jews are intermarried. The only people who made Aliyah were the people who couldn't make it in their countries. It was the lower class, the Mishnah list off, the people who didn't have any strong family ties, and it was not a good situation, and the people were very assimilated. Not so different than the, nowadays. And Ezra, the Ezra and the Chemin, they read, they take out, they read the Sefer, they read from the Sefer Torah, here in verse 8, Vayikru b'Sefer Torah Elohim mefarash, v'shum seichel v'yavinu v'yikra. Ezra read the Torah to them, and he tells them, Vayomer lechem, he says, Al titablu v'al tivchu, do not cry. Do not cry today. It's a special day. And you should go home. You should go home, eat a big, nice meal and drink and send gifts to one another. That's the notion of shofar, of Rosh Hashanah in the Torah, meant as a happy day. We know that in the Middle Ages or before the Middle Ages or the Gaonim, there was a custom to fast. I believe Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, used to fast on Rosh Hashanah. That's the tension between Yom HaDin and Yom HaSimcha, and it's a day of joy. But so there's really very, very little in the Torah, both about Rosh Hashanah, nothing about the creation of the world, very little about Shofar. So we're going to try to put this together, explain this a little bit. I just want to add one idea that we said that Rosh Hashanah is in many ways just the announcement that it's the first day of the seventh month. That's Rosh Hashanah. It's not so much Rosh Hashanah. And we know, what is it Rosh Hashanah? It's the beginning of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Everything Rosh Hashanah to lead up to Yom Kippur. That's even the way we observe it. Rosh Hashanah Yikatevun, but Yom Kippur Yikatevun. We begin the process, but Rosh Hashanah is the lead up to Yom Kippur. So it's very interesting. If you've learned the Mishnayot in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, there are four chapters in the Mishnah. But those who've learned it know that the first two chapters, the first half of the Masechet doesn't talk about, except for the first two Mishnayot, which we'll get to, except for the first two Mishnayot does not talk about Rosh Hashanah at all. It talks about Kiddush HaChodesh. It talks about the mitzvah to sanctify the new moon. That was the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people before they left Egypt. The importance of time, the importance of the calendar. And the first half of the Masechet talks on how the witness, how you interrogate the witnesses and when they come, what they do, etc. Two whole chapters. And only in chapter 3 and 4 do we talk about Rosh Hashanah. So clearly the editors of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, was basically telling us that Rosh Hashanah is a holiday of the celebration of the new month, the seventh month. Now, there's a fascinating idea here, and this I heard from Rabbi Avi Walfish. I don't know how many people have heard of Avi Walfish. He lives in Tekoa, I believe, in Israel, and he is really the world's expert in the literary analysis of the Mishnah. He actually did his PhD thesis on the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, and what's sort of the new style in Tanakh, sort of the literary style, he very much applies to the Mishnah. He has some very, very fascinating insights. So one of his quite fascinating insights I found was that the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, the second chapter in Rosh Hashanah ends with the famous dispute between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. The dispute when to declare the new moon, and Rabban Gamliel declared it a day earlier than Rabbi Yoshua. And Rabbi Yeshua said, you're wrong. And Rabban Gamliel said, you have to come with your wallet and you have to come on the day you celebrate Yom Kippur. Very not nice, the, like religious intolerance. You know, he didn't respect the religious rites of Rabbi Yeshua. He made him violate Yom Kippur, and Rabbi Yeshua didn't know what to do. So he goes to this to Rabbi Akiva. He goes to people. They say, listen, even if you're right, what are we going to do? We'll have anarchy. If we can't start worrying about every month. The Beit Din has the right. These are the holidays, Asher Tikru Otam, that you should call them. And the word Otam in the biblical text is written without a Vav. It's written Aleph Taf Mem. So the rabbis understood it, Atem, you call the month. In other words, Atem Afilu Muatim, you call it. Even if you are mistaken, it doesn't matter. You can declare the new moon within reason. But you can declare the new moon, and that's why, you know, we have a rule, Rosh Hashanah can never fall, the first day can never be on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. What kind of a ridiculous rule is that? If the new moon is on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, that's Rosh Hashanah. No, the rabbis, for reasons we're not going to get into now, the rabbi said, we're not going to have Rosh Hashanah on those days. So we have the ability to manipulate the calendar. So that's what they told Rabbi Yeshua. That what can you do? He's the Nasi, and you have to listen, even if he's wrong. And of course, Rabbi Yeshua goes, and that saved the Jewish people. You can imagine, I've said this many, many times. I don't know if I've said it on a Zoom class, but I've said many, many times that thank God, with all the disputes between Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, whatever form of Judaism you want, we all agree on the calendar. Everybody is Rosh Hashanah this week. Can you imagine? I mean, you can imagine, we would not be part of the same people. If half the people celebrated Rosh Hashanah one day and the other half 2 days later, that did happen in the Middle Ages, Rav Sajak Gaon, happened in the 10th century for 2 years over Pesach, and thank God it didn't last. It threatened to split the Jewish people into two. The calendar is very important. That's the second chapter. The second chapter tells us that man has the ability to manipulate the calendar. The end of the first chapter, the last Mishnah, not quite as famous as that story, is that if whenever you see the new moon, you travel to Jerusalem and you testify that you saw the new moon, and the court would declare the new moon based on your testimony. So you're allowed to violate Shabbat in order to testify the new moon. That's the law in the Mishnah. You have to call them b'moadam in its proper time. You have to. So if you see the moon on a Friday night and you live within 24 hours, right? If you're going to get there after 24 hours, it won't help. The next day will be Rosh Chodesh anyway. But if you can get there on Shabbos afternoon, you got to travel and you got to take, and the Mishnah says, and you got to take equipment and food. And even if you're not so well, we carry you on the bed. Carrying is not allowed on Shabbat, in order that we can declare the new moon at its proper time. So you see, these two Mishnayot totally contradict each other. The end of the first chapter talks about the importance of making sure that every holiday is observed in its exact time. And the end of the second chapter talks about that Rabbi Gamliel, this year, that year, it doesn't matter, whatever the Beit Din does. And Atem B'Moadam, they contradict. Either you do it or in its proper time. So what Rabbi Walfish points out is here you have the inherent tension between a divine legal system and a human legal system. And the Torah, by Kiddush Chodesh, we are the ones who declared the new moon. And the Gemara is very clear. We tell God when to judge us. When we say it's the new moon, that's when God will come and judge us. So there's this idea of man and God working together and in tension with each other. Obviously, a human and divine, you know, clock don't work together. I thought that's sort of a beautiful idea that highlights so much about Judaism, and in many ways highlights what Rosh Hashanah is. What I'm saying now is Rosh Hashanah in many ways is a creation of the rabbis. It's pretty clear it's a creation of the rabbis. The question is, why did they create it the way they did? In other words, the idea that there's a holiday on the first day of the seventh month, that's the biblical idea. Of course, we have that. You can't do melacha, you can't do work. You have to have a Yom Teruah, whatever Yom Teruah means, which we don't know exactly. Some kind of a blowing. But the fact that it's Rosh Hashanah or that it's a Yom HaDin, that's not mentioned anywhere in the Chumash. And that doesn't come till much later. The first reference, so the first two Mishnayot, and I'll share my screen again just for a moment. The first two Mishnayot in Masechet Rosh Hashanah introduce these ideas. The first Mishnah of Rosh Hashanah, I said the first two Mishnah I do talk, and then it goes to Kiddush Arba Rosh Hashanah Him. So it already tells you Rosh Hashanah is not so special. There are four new years, Achad ben Nisan, right? If you ask me, when's the new year? It's the first of Nisan. Rosh Hashanah is the seventh month. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim. This month is the new month. So the month of Nisan is one Rosh Chodesh, one Rosh Hashanah, Elul for animal tithing, and Echav Rapet Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Lashanim, Shmitim, the Shemitah year starts then, the Yovel year, Netiyah Yirakot, this has to do with the tithing of our produce, and Achad B'Shvat, there's a debate when, you know, Tu B'Shvat is. According to Beit Shammai, like Tu B'Shvat is on the first of Shvat, right? Okay, right? I mean, it's he calls it Aleph Shvat, because he wouldn't call it. So on the first of Shvat, and Beit Hillel says the 15th of Shvat, that's also for agricultural law. So we see already there are four Rosh Hashanahs. So there are four cycles. We have a fiscal year and the school year and a baseball season. Everything has its own year. So Rosh Hashanah is one of 4 years, but it's not something so spectacularly special. For certain laws, there we go by Echad v'Tishrei. Then the next Mishnah tells us, "Ba'arba prakim olam nidon." Also, there's not just one day of judgment. The world is just four times a year. But Pesach halatua. Pesach on wheat, that's why we bring the Korban HaOmer, a barley sacrifice, but Atzeret al Peret HaElon, and Atzeret Peret HaElon on the fruit, Bikurim, Rosh Hashanah Kol Ba'ei Olam. Ba'ei Olam always means the people of the world. It means Rosh Hashanah is a non-Jewish holiday. It includes non-Jews. Ba'ei Olam means all people in the world. Whoever comes to the world, Orim Lefanav Kivnei Maron, to debate how to interpret that. Let's say like sheep. That's the most popular explanation, I think. Hayotzer Yachad Libam, God knows who we are. And the Bechag and on Sukkot, we're judged on the water. So that's it. 4 days, and then the Mishnah starts to talk about the sanctification of the new moon. So the question is, where does Yom Hadin come from? So I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I don't know if I saw this somewhere or it's my own. You don't have to accept it. You can disagree with me, argue. But what I want to claim is that you didn't need, the Mishnah was written in the aftermath of the exile of the Jewish people from the land of Israel. That's why it was written, right? It's meant to be an oral law. But once the Jewish people are in exile and dispersed, it's impossible to maintain that system. Growing people are over the place. You couldn't maintain an oral law when the Jewish people go into exile. So it sounds perhaps a little radical, but perhaps when there was Yom HaDin before the exile, it was every single day. If you listen, it's going to rain in its time. The Torah tells us that God judges us on a regular basis. It will rain, it won't rain. And that's why God chose the land of Israel. I mean, we don't think like this at all, right? But in the Torah, right before Vayam Shmo, it says the land of Israel is not like Egypt. Egypt, you got the Nile, you don't have to worry about water at all. That's why the first of the 10 plagues is on the water, right? Water is so, it's abundant. The land of Israel is low carrots to Mitzrayim. It's not like Egypt. The eyes of the Lord are on it. May reishit shana, from the beginning of the year, at achrit shana. That's where the rabbis say, may reishit shana, at the beginning of the year, God judges what will be at the end of the year. May reishit shana. And that's the introduction to the second paragraph of the Shema. So why did God choose the land of Israel? It's not like Egypt. We're not going to have water. And God's going to judge us on water. I don't know, every day, maybe judge at the beginning of the year, but whatever, you have a much more, God is present in the land of Israel. That's what it means. That's what we say. God is present. Chutz Laaretz, when we are exiled, God went into exile with us. But God, that's not where God is. God's home, ki beiti, my house, is Beit Vila, yikarei l'chol amim. My house is the house and the Beit HaMikdash. So when we go, so we don't have that connection to God, right? The Menachem Begin joke, in Israel, God is a local call, right? I don't remember the whole joke, but I'm sure people do. When you call God from Israel, it's a local call. And then here it's in Canada, the United States, it's a long distance call. So you didn't need a Yom HaDin so much, because every day living in Israel was an idea of Yom HaDin. But once the Jewish people are exiled, we don't feel the presence of God. God is not with us in the same way. And perhaps that's where the concept develops of Yom HaDin. The commentaries all struggle. You don't, there's nowhere, the Gemara mentions it, matter of fact. The Mishnah says there are four Yom Hadins. And we understand Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. That's the beginning of the rainy season on Sukkot. We pray for rain. That makes sense that we judge and write for rain. That Pesach is wheat, that also makes sense. The beginning of the harvest time. But why Rosh Hashanah? There's no logic to it. So some want to say, well, that's when God created the world. That's when Adam sinned. That's when Adam judged. Yeah, but what if you hold the opinion the world was created in Nisan? It's very, very difficult. So in a sense, what I'm arguing perhaps is that we made it up in a sense. In other words, after we left the Beit HaMikdash, after we left Israel, so we had no choice. And we, the relationship to God changed very much, which we know, relationship to God. And that manifests itself on Yom HaDin. Okay, now, the other concept was, I mentioned before, Rosh Chodesh and Nisan and Rosh Hashanah. So we all know Nisan is the first month of the year. That's really the first month. That's the and that is a Rosh Hashanah. So Pesach is the Rosh Hashanah, the month of Nisan. And so it's very interesting. Let me just share my screen for 1 minute. You'll see something. I find this quite fascinating. You'll tell me if you agree. Don't have to agree. Let me just hold on. Let me go on. It's better here. This is better to see. So if you look at the psukim here, okay, so look here, it says, Shamor Chodesh Aviv, Vasita Pesach Lashem Elokecha. So when do we observe, when do we keep Pesach? The Chodesh Aviv. It's very striking. It doesn't say on the 15th of Nisan. It says the whole month of Aviv is the time you do Pesach. It sounds like from this verse, you can celebrate Pesach anytime in that first month that you want. Vasita Pesach Lashem Elokecha. So that's sort of, it's not a specific day. Pesach is not, at least in that concept, it's not mentioned to be on a specific day. It's mentioned on the month. There's something special about the month of Nisan, and then there's something special about the month of Tishrei. The Pasuk says Tiku Bachodesh so far. I'll just show it again. I mean, the Pasuk is sort of well known, but here, Tiku Bachodesh so far. When do we blow shofar? We blow shofar in the month of Nisan, in the month of Tishrei, Bachodesh shofar. So both by Nisan and by Tishrei, the psukim are less, at least those verses, are less concerned about the day that it happens. It's sort of a monthly. There's something special about the month of Nisan, and there's something special about the month of Tishrei, and the day are less important. Of course, other verses tell us we have to celebrate Pesach on the 15th, and the Torah tells us it's the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the seventh month. But the fact that there are other verses that indicate it's not the day so much that count the month is very, very striking, I believe. Now, what's the difference between Nisan and Tishrei? So we alluded to it. Tishrei is Ba'ei Olam. Tishrei is a holiday for the world. It's when we pray for the world. We begin the Zichronot on Noach. We don't start with Abraham. God remembered Noach in the Teva. Rosh Hashanah, the creation of the world. Adam is not Jewish, right? So that is Tishrei. Nisan is, of course, a Jewish holiday. Nisan is the founding of Jewish history, etc. And we know that a non-Jew was not allowed to partake of the Paschal Lamb. Nisan is a very Jewish holiday for our special relationship to God. And Tishrei represents God as the king of the world. And of course, the Netziv points this out in his commentary on the Chumash. The Jew, of course, a Torah Mada view. You know, a Jew lives in two worlds. A Jew lives in the world of Nisan, and a Jew lives in the world of Tishrei. Rabbi Soloveitchik, of course, developed, we talk about this a lot, that the world of Tishrei is a world we have to be concerned with the affairs of the world, what's going on all the issues of the world. And then on Pesach, we sort of look inward. It's a very Jewish holiday. But anyway, so that's that's a little bit Nisan Tishrei, but we still, so what we're claiming so far is the Yom HaDin is an idea that developed mainly in Chutz Laretz. It's an idea that came up, it's first mentioned in the Mishnah. They're not really earlier sources. There's, of course, no mention in the Torah. The Torah, the one pasuk in Nehemiah says, go enjoy yourself. It's not a day to cry. It's a day to rejoice and to have a festive meal. So that's one of. So let's talk a little bit about shofar and blowing shofar and what shofar is and et cetera. So shofar is not mentioned by Rosh Hashanah, but it says it's a Yom Teruah. Now, there is, so where does Tekiah and Teruah come from? Anybody want to pipe up? Where does the notion of Tekiah?
Chatzotrot.
Right, so that comes from the Chatzotrot. Very good. So if we'll go back to our screen here.
Isn't it Perek Yud in
yes, Bamidbar? It's Perek Yud. Very good. It's Perek Yud in Sefer Bamidbar. Let's go towards the end. Aselecha shtei chatzotrot kesef mikshata aseseh ubakilatam tikku velo tariu. You should blow, but you should do it tekiah. Now, this is not with the shofar. This is with the chatzotrot. This is with the chatzotrot, not with the shofar. But if you want to gather the people, you do a tekiah. When do you do a teruah ki tavo milchama bartzachem? When there's war. Alatzar tzererachem v'ha'areyotem b'chatzotrot. You do a teruah, ha'areyotem b'chatzotrot b'nizkartem. And you should be, you'll be remembered. L'ifnei Hashem Elokeichem. You remember for God. And Rashi quotes to the Sifri. This is the source of Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot. Utkatem is Shofarot, Lizicharon is Zichron, and Hashem Elokeichem is Malchiyot. So that's where we know from the Tekiah and the Teruah. Now, the difference between the Tekiah, obviously, the Tekiah is a very upbeat sound. It's a unified sound. It's when we gather together as a nation. The Teruah is a very fearful sound. It's the sound of war. It's a sound of crying out to God. And we know the Teruah is the idea, Yom Yevava, Yom Teruah. The Unkelis translate, it's a day of crying, but that's the Teruah. But the Teruah is surrounded by a Tekiah. In other words, this again is this dual notion. Is Rosh Hashanah a happy day or a fearful day? So the Tekiah represents a notion of a very happy day, very upbeat day. And the Teruah represents a notion of a very, very fearful day. And of course, it's both. It's the combination of both. But the Teruah has to be surrounded with a Tekiah, which sort of indicates that it has more of this sort of happiness or confidence that the fact that God judges us is actually a wonderful idea. That God doesn't judge the animals. You only judge things you care about, right? When your neighbor's kid runs around and it's not your issue. You care when your kid makes trouble. It bothers you. You punish people who are close to you. You don't punish people you don't care about. So Yom HaDin has a certain fearful aspect to it, but it's actually a beautiful aspect that God comes to judge us where it's very, very lucky. Okay. Now, we have to talk about, of course, why we don't blow shofar on Shabbat. And I mentioned in the beginning, this is a difficult idea because it's clear in the Torah you blow shofar on the first day of the seventh month. There's no exceptions to blowing of Shabbat. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah actually presents two reasons why we don't blow shofar, or they reject one of the reasons. So the first reason, here I'll share my screen again. So let me go here. Shabbat and Shofar. Okay. So the Mishnah says like this, Yontav Shal Rosh Hashanah. Yontav Rosh Hashanah is a Yontav. Shachal Yop B'Shabbat B'Mikdash Yitokim V'Alo B'Medina. They used to blow the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash, but they didn't blow it in the Medina. Mishachara Beit HaMikdash, Hitim Rabban Yochman and Zakkai, Shiyu Tokim Mechom Mekom Sheyesh Bo Beitin. So when the temple was destroyed, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said, you can blow shofar anyway. And as recently as 1905, there were people who blew, that's not so recent, but there are people who blew shofar in Yerushalayim when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat. They convened a Beit Din. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says you can blow whenever there's a Beit Din. Rav Elazar says, lo itin, Rav Yochanan el v'yavne v'vad, only in the special Beit Din in Yavne. And Amar lo, no, echad Yavne v'echad kol makom sheyesh bo Beit Din. You don't just need the Beit Din in Yavne. Any place where there's a Beit Din, you can blow shofar on Shabbat. And that's a separate issue. But the Mishnah makes a distinction between the Beit HaMikdash and the Medina and the countryside. So the Gemara wants to know why, where you get this from. Menahane Mile. So the Gemara quotes the view of Rav Chama bar Chanina. One verse says Zichron Trua, and one verse says a Yom Trua. Right? We saw that the two mentions of Rosh Hashanah. One is a remembrance, Zichron Trua, and one says Yom Trua. So what? Lo Kasha. It's what is it? Do we remember it or do we blow it? Right? The Ramban says the mitzvah of Zachor et Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho. Remember Shabbat or mention Shabbat. Let's say to remember Shabbat. So when do you fulfill that mitzvah? You fulfill the mitzvah on Tuesday, on Wednesday. Hayom yom rabi'i b'shabbat, hayom yom chamishi b'shabbat. We remember something when we don't have it. When we experience something, we don't need to remember it. Zachor is when we don't have it. So zichron shura means, it implies you're not going to blow shofar. You could understand it differently, but one implication is we're remembering the shofar. So that's when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat. And when Rosh Hashanah doesn't fall on Shabbat, it's a Yontif Shechaliyah Bechol, then we would blow it, be a Yom Teruah. In other words, the source not to blow the shofar on Shabbos is a biblical verse. It's based on the biblical writing of the two times of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Teruah and Zichron Teruah. So that's the first reason. The reason perhaps that's less famous is because the Gemara rejects that reason. The Gemara Rava rejects that reason. Midaraita, what are you talking about? What's going on here? Why would they do this? And we went into the whole Gemara. So the Gemara gives the more famous answer. Hakol b'kim, hakol chayavim b'tkiyat shofar. Everybody's obligated to blow the shofar, but ain't hakol b'kim. And not everybody is expert in blowing the shofar. We're afraid that, you know, the guy who's the Baal Tokeh is going to wake up at 6 in the morning to practice blowing shofar. And he realizes he doesn't know how to blow so well. It's not going so well. So he's going to run to his teacher to help him blow the shofar. No, it's going to be Shabbos. He's half asleep. He's going to run out of the house and he's going to carry the shofar for a month in public property. And that's, of course, not allowed on Shabbos. So because of this one guy who may run to his Rebbe's house, his music Rebbe's house, to blow shofar, so the whole Jewish people have to miss out the mitzvah of shofar. It's like unbelievable. I mean, it says a lot about the individual, but it says unbelievable. Behind Utama de Lulav, and that's why we don't take Lulav on Shabbos, because you may take the Lulav on Shabbos. That's a little bit more understandable, because everybody takes the Lulav. How many people blow shofar? 1 out of 100. Maybe this year, a few more. But how many people blow shofar? Right, but lulav everybody takes. It's also strange, but okay. Vayinu tama de Megillah. That's the reason we don't read the Megillah. Our calendar is set up so the 14th of Adar never falls on Shabbat, but the 15th of Adar can in Yerushalayim. And of course, when that happens, they read the Megillah on the 14th. Now, this is very strange. I wrote, if anybody saw my article last night I don't know, but I'm 99.999% convinced that if the rabbis of the Talmud were alive today, they would ban shul 100%. Nobody could go to shul this year. If they won't let us blow shofar, because one person might carry, shofar is a biblical mitzvah. Like, everybody knows how important the shofar. No, can't blow shofar this year because one shlemiel who might forget, doesn't know how to blow so well, he's going to go and learn on Shabbos morning. We can't blow shofar, so that the whole Jewish people can't blow shofars. I would think I think they're afraid of more than one person catching COVID in shul around the world. They would probably ban shul this year. So you daven at home. Anyways, that's my 2 cents worth. You can take it or leave it. But anyways, but it's an unbelievable idea, but we have to understand it. But we'll try to explain it. But let's try to understand what's the difference between the Medina. Why is there a difference between blowing shofar in the Beit HaMikdash and not blowing shofar, and blowing shofar outside of the Mikdash. So first of all, many of you may know there's a fascinating dispute between the Rambam and Rashi, how to define Medina. How do you define Medina? So the Rambam says Medina means, the Mikdash means Yerushalayim. The Makom HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, the city of Jerusalem is the city of the temple. So when the Mishnah says they used to blow in the Mikdash, it includes Jerusalem. Jerusalem, they blew the shofar on Shabbat. And that's why today there are many people who go to the Kotel on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and because they feel it may be a biblical mitzvah to take the lulav on at the Kotel all 7 days, because we know that that's in the Torah. The way the rabbis understood the verse in the Torah, the mitzvah of lulav on a biblical level is only 1 day, but lifnei Hashem, in the presence of God, u'smachtem lifnei Hashem shivat yamim, it's in the Beit HaMikdash, it's 7 days. And if you assume the Beit HaMikdash includes Yerushalayim, so it could be that there would be a biblical mitzvah today to take lulav all 7 days. So that's just in and of itself a very interesting argument. Rashi says no. Rashi says Mikdash is the Mikdash, the Beit HaMikdash, which on a certain level, at least to understand what the difference is, Rashi makes more sense. By the way, David Silber, David Silber from Trisha will be starting a class, a three-part series next week. So he pointed out, it's cute, just an aside. Medina comes from the word din, judgment, Medina. Bechom Medina is the night in the place of judgment, and in the Esther, in the Purim, you call the whole Medina, Medina, you know, over and over. The word Medina appears like many, many times in Megillat Esther. And it's all about, you know, the laws. Yodei Dat Medina, Achashverosh is so concerned. God, the protocol has to be carried out 100%. Just sort of an interesting wordplay on Medina and Din. Okay, so the question is, why is there a difference between the temple and, or Yerushalayim and everywhere else? So if the reason is like Rava, like we generally assume, that it's a rabbinic enactment, that we should blow shofar. Now, what's also fascinating is Rava lives when? Does anybody know when Rava lived? Okay. Rava lives in the 4th century. Rava is the 4th generation Amora. Abaye and Rava. Havaye to Abaye and Rava. They're already towards the end of the Talmudic period. Not quite the end, but sort of the... and before Rava, now obviously very often people are quoting things that are traditions from early generation, but it seems like almost funny. That's a little bit strange. Like, why don't we blow? The Gemara doesn't know. The Mishnah had a ruling. We blew shofar in the temple, but not outside the temple. Why? Well, maybe it's based on the verses in the Torah. No, that can't be based on the verses in the Torah. It must be what Rava said. What do you mean what Rava said? In other words, they had a tradition for hundreds of years. What did they not know why they weren't blowing shofar? It's also just fascinating historically. When exactly did they stop blowing shofar? I'll ask I think Rav Zevin raises this question. We know according to the Torah, Rosh Hashanah is only 1 day, of course. And we know that Rosh Hashanah is the only holiday that is celebrated for 2 days in Israel. All the other Yom Tovim is 1 day, but Rosh Hashanah is 2 days, even in Israel. The question is, what came first? Was there ever a time period in Jewish history that there was 1 day of Rosh Hashanah and they wouldn't blow shofar? That's just a question to think about, because how do the rabbis, there is a notion the rabbis passively are entitled to tell you not to do a mitzvah. They can tell you not to daven. They can tell you not to go to shul. They can't tell you to eat non-kosher food unless it's an absolutely pressing need on a temporary basis. They can. They wrote down the Sefer Torah. That was oral law. There are times, but generally we assume that the rabbis can do much more in a positive mitzvah. Yesh koach v'yad chachamim lakor davar min haTorah v'sheif al taseh. The rabbis have the power to uproot something to be passive, don't blow shofar. But the assumption is they can't uproot it permanently. They couldn't tell us, they couldn't tell us that we're going to consider the shofar a musical instrument. And the same way there's a rabbinic prohibition to play musical instruments because it may break and you may come to fix it. So too, you can never blow shofar. That they can't do, because that means we'd never have the mitzvah of shofar. They can do it away temporarily. The question is, what if there's only 1 day Rosh Hashanah? Something to think about. But it's interesting, the reason only comes up in the time that the Gemara knows, the time of Rabba in the fourth century in Babel, in Babylonia. Now, why would there be a difference? So that's pretty easy to explain, because the assumption is that the laws of the temple, rabbinic laws, don't apply in the temple. Why don't rabbinic laws apply to the temple? Because we don't have to be Kohanim's Rizim, the people in the temple, the fear of God, the presence of God, the people who work there are meticulously observant, and we're not afraid that they're going to make a mistake. There's to be somebody to remind them. Rabbinic laws are needed outside the temple area. So it makes sense. It's a rabbinic decree. Somebody may carry accidentally, but it's not going to happen in the temple. And if it would, there'd be people right away there to make sure it doesn't happen. But if you hold, the reason is Zichron Shrua and Yom Shrua. Now, I say, what do you mean if I hold? We don't hold that. Not so fast. The Babylonian Talmud rejects that, but the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi leaves it at that. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, no, the reason is Zichron Shrua and Yom Shrua. They're not bothered by the Babylonian rejection. I mean, the Babylonian rejections afterwards. But the Jerusalem Talmud says it's Zichron Shrua and Yom Shrua. It's seemingly a biblical law. So the question is, why in the world is there a difference, according to the Torah, between the laws? Now, we know there's, like, for example, all the laws. How do we derive what we can't do on Shabbat? It's whatever they did in the temple. So in the temple, they slaughtered animals. We can't slaughter animals, right? In the temple, they did all kinds of things. The temple service went on Shabbat. But that's the temple service. The blowing of the shofar doesn't seem to fit that. So why would they allow it? So here, Rav Soloveitchik develops this. Many people develop this idea. This is most likely the source that the shofar is a form of prayer that we've touched upon. We'll develop that a little more. Shofar is basically prayer without words. We pray a lot. We sit there and we daven on whatever this year, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, however long you daven, and you pray, and then, you know, words are limiting. We can never express ourselves fully. A cry of a child, the parents understand right away. Crying is much more, can express yourself better. So we daven with words, and then we say, God, I don't know what to say anymore, and we daven without words. That's the shofar. And of course, that's why we blow the shofar in the Shmon Esrei. Some people blow it in the middle of, in the side. I love that. I grew up when they blew the shofar in the silent Amidah, and I found that so powerful. It's quiet and shul, and all of a sudden you hear the sound of the shofar. It's very, to me, very moving. Unfortunately, for the last like 20 years, I've davened in shuls. They don't do that. But they only blow it in the repetition of the mean. Okay, different customs. They don't want to confuse people, whatever the reason. But shofar is a form of prayer. We don't eat matzah in the middle of davening. We shake the lulav, by the way, in the middle. Challah, we'll maybe discuss that in a couple weeks. So shofar is a form of prayer. It's very nice. And the Beit HaMikdash is the place of prayer. The purpose of the Beit HaMikdash, Ki Beiti Beiti B'Lai Yikarei L'Chol Amin. We say it every day in the Slichot. We'll say it on Yom Kippur 5 times. V'Havi'otim Al Har Kodshi V'Simachtim V'Beit Tefilati. I'm going to bring it to my holy mountain and rejoice with you V'Simachtim in Beit Tefilati, in my house of prayer. Ki Beiti Beiti B'Lai Yikarei L'Chol Amin. The universal aspect. My house is a house of prayer for all nations, right? Rosh Hashanah. I mean, we say this verse Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur on universal holidays. It's a Beit Tfilah L'Chol Amim. So the temple is a place of tfilah. And therefore, the Torah would say we're going to blow shofar in the temple. Now this, like I say, makes more sense according to Rashi, right? And not to, that you may not carry act. It makes more sense according to Rashi, I think, logically. But the Rambam says this would extend to Yerushalayim. Now it's interesting, let me share my screen maybe one last time. Just show you an interesting halacha. The Mishnah says, "Ein potchim me'asrim v'achat kiyot b'mikdash, ve'mosifim al arba'im v'shmona." Every day, 365 days a year, they used to blow a minimum of 21 sounds of the shofar. We blow 100 on Rosh Hashanah. I don't know, this year maybe some people are doing less. But, between 21 and 48. How do you get that? Bechol yom, every single day of the year, there were 21 tekiyot. Shalosh l'ptichat sharim, 3 when they opened up the gates. Teisha l'tamid shel shachar, v'teisha l'tamid shel ben arbaim. They used to blow like tekiya, truah, tekiya, 3 times, whatever. 9 kolot, every for the korban in the morning, and 9 kolot for the korban tamid in the afternoon. In other words, the korbanot, the sacrifice, were brought with the shofar. And on Shabbat, they blew an extra 9 for the korban musaf. They got the 30 on Shabbat. And on Erev Shabbat, they would blow 6 times to make sure people, I mean, that's not in the Beit HaMikdash, that was really outside the Beit HaMikdash, but they would blow to tell people Shabbat is coming. That's the minhag today, Yerushalayim. If you go to Jerusalem, you hear the sound of the shofar, whatever, 40 minutes before time. They blow the shofar. So you see right away, the shofar is intimately connected to the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, if you want to, it's not exactly the same, but you know, we draw parallels between the sacrifices and our prayers. Our prayers are paralleled after the sacrifices, you know, mincha, shachrit, and mincha, and the timing of the prayers relate to when we brought the sacrifices. So it's clear that the same way that sacrifices and shofar go together, prayer and shofar go together. So that's why, that would explain on a biblical level, why we would blow shofar in the Beit HaMikdash, perhaps even in Yerushalayim. The holiness extends to the whole city when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat. And like I mentioned, there were times in history where people did want to blow the shofar, especially in Yerushalayim on Shabbat, including in the 19th and 20th century. Rav Zevin, as always worth reading, HaMoedim Ba'alacha, Arts World translated to English, whatever festival, I don't know what they call it. HaMoedim Ba'alacha, it's a fantastic work. Rav Zevin had an amazing ability to explain difficult concepts and language that is so simple, a really amazing person. So he discusses that idea that in 1905, there was a brouhaha, you know, about blowing the shofar about on Shabbos. A rabbi from Hungary came to, and he decided we're going to blow shofar. Okay, it was Peseder. Okay, so that would explain why our tefillah, the Beit HaMikdash, that's the place we blow on Shabbos. Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about is, it's all very nice, but what's the idea behind it? There's sort of, I would say, a little bit of the philosophical idea behind this. In other words, not blowing shofar on Shabbat. So the shofar, by the way, what I didn't explain, what I should have mentioned, is all this is, in other words, this is a secondary reason for blowing shofar. I said at the beginning of this year, we blow shofar because to announce it's the 7th month. And that's perhaps a coronation of God. 7 is the number we appreciate God every 7th day of the week. 7 years, the Shemitah, that's 7. So that's the Malchiyot. We blow the shofar. This is a special month. Yom Kippur is coming. God is the king of the world. 7, we blow shofar. The second reason we're blowing shofar, because the Torah doesn't tell us why we blow shofar, but it's, you see how our system is set up. It's the Yom Hadin. We're praying to God. The shofar is our instrument of prayer. So again, that's, is the tension. Is shofar a very positive, or, you know, or I mean the malchut of Hashem, and here are praying out to God as we cry even out to God. So these are the two aspects of the shofar on why we might be blowing it, and there's the distinction. So why not on Shabbat? So if you're going to tell me the reason we blow shofar is to coronate God, and the 7th month is special, the 7th month is special, but you know what? The 7th day is more special than the 7th month. We know how Shabbat, we know halachically, you know, there's always a thing people, you know, I mean, it's true, but it's not 100% true. In other words, how Shabbat is more important than Yom Kippur. It's not exactly true. I mean, it's true that there's 7 aliyot and not 6. That was a debate. And it's true in theory, there's the violation of Shabbat is considered worse than Yom Kippur. But Yom Kippur, of course, offers opportunities for forgiveness that we don't have on Shabbat. But on the conceptual level, we recognize God on Shabbat, the 7th day, more than the 7th month. So you don't need to blow shofar. You don't need to blow shofar on Shabbat. I mean, this is like already homiletical a little bit, but if you want to sort of take a step back and at the end of the day say, you know, the Torah says we blow shofar, why are we not blowing shofar, you know, this year, we don't need the shofar. We recognize God as the king of the world by observing of Shabbat. If you're going to tell me the shofar is our prayers and it's a day of judgment, so perhaps, and especially if we take the idea that we tell God when he judges us, right? We decide when Rosh Hashanah is. And maybe the judgment was more common. It's after the exile, the judgment. We put greater emphasis on Rosh Hashanah as a Yom Hadin. So perhaps, I don't know if this fits 100%, but there's no judgment on Shabbat. You know, there's a famous story, I remember as a kid, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, you know, the Hasidic Rebbe, who always defended the Jewish people. Whatever we did wrong, he always defended us. Great to have somebody like that around. They always looked at the bright side, always gave the Jews the benefit of the doubt. So apparently one year when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat, he said to God, you know, God, you have to make this a good year for everybody, because you're not allowed to, you write down what's in the book, right? You write down the good, the bad. So you can't write on Shabbat, but if you're writing to save somebody's pikuach nefesh, you can write on Shabbat. But if you're going to write for a bad year, God, you're not allowed to write on Shabbat. So it's a cute story. It's a Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev. I don't know if it's really true, of course, but it's the idea that judgment and Shabbat don't go together. And the truth of the matter, that is a halacha. The court is not allowed to issue any judgments on Shabbat. The Gemara learns, HaShabbat. You can't light a fire on Shabbat. So one of the interpretations, a beiting can't issue a death penalty on Shabbat to somebody. The court, and as a matter of fact, the court can't even sit on Friday, because if they sit on Friday, if you decreed somebody to get a death penalty on Friday, you know, you're supposed to kill a person on the next day. We don't have, what's it called, where they sit in jail for 10 years till they make 85 appeals. That's a inoy hadin. That's a terrible thing. We take many, many, many precautions before issuing a death penalty. But once it's issued, the death penalty has to be carried out within the next day. They would stay up all night, etc. But okay, so that's the shofar. So just let me review quickly some of the points we said. I know we sort of said a variety of ideas. Rosh Hashanah is unique. We don't have no idea why we have Rosh Hashanah. The Torah just, and it's only mentioned twice, no reasons given, etc. And it's hidden. Tiku b'chodesh shofar, because of the whole notion of Rosh Hashanah is hidden, and it's not even mentioned as Rosh Hashanah. There are four Rosh Hashanahs that come later. So that comes in the Mishnah. Rosh Hashanah perhaps is more Yom Kippur. In the Torah, it's Yom Kippur that is considered Rosh Hashanah. In the same way that shofar is not mentioned. Shofar is mentioned by Yovel, and shofar is mentioned by receiving of the Torah. And both, of course, are the idea of declaring God as the master of the world. Yovel, we can't even own our land. All land has to go back in Yovel. You think, you know, you build up a real estate empire. I mean, imagine if we had the system today. It means for your lifetime, whatever, 50 years in business, time to retire, whatever. But, you know, if every 50 years we acknowledge God as the master of the world. So that idea gets transferred into Rosh Hashanah. But we said that perhaps we blow shofar to announce it's the seventh month. Seven is the special number. And so therefore, the seventh month is going to be an important month. And therefore, we blow shofar, and it heralds the coming of Yom Kippur and Sukkot, which are the main festivals of the seventh month. We discussed the tension between in the calendar, the human calendar, a divine calendar. Do we decide, Rabban Gamliel decide, or do you violate the Shabbat to make sure Rosh Hashanah is on the same day? That's the inherent tension. But bottom line is, we tell God when Rosh Hashanah is, and maybe we tell God when he judges us, and maybe we tell God, therefore, after the exile, we sort of emphasize the judgment should be on Rosh Hashanah once a year, for 10 days, whatever, as the bosom be every day, which is how the Torah seems to present the judgment of God, Im Shamoa, every day. And then we discussed where Yom Hadin comes from, perhaps connected to the creation of the world and the two creations of the world, Nisan and Tishrei. And then we discussed why we don't blow shofar on Shabbat. It's a very difficult idea. According to the Torah, we should blow shofar, but we're afraid this one Jew, we do a lot, you know, it's like we have the law. If the non-Jews say, hand this over, one Jew, or we'll kill everybody. So that's the famous law. You're not allowed to hand over a Jew. That's a for a whole other shir, but the idea that one life, what one Jew does, can affect the entire people of Israel. Because of this one Jew, we're not going to blow shofar. But there obviously has to be something more to it, and that's what we were trying to explain, that maybe we don't need shofar on Shabbat. In the temple, we do need shofar on Shabbat, because the whole purpose of the temple is prayer, and shofars are instrument of prayer to God. Okay, if anybody has any questions or comments, otherwise, I want to wish everybody a wonderful year. Please, God, we'll continue next week on Yom Kippur, next Thursday, and in 2 weeks we'll have on Sukkot. And we'll pick up Monday morning with Rabbi Adler, the Rabbi Soloveitchik's Yom Kippur, and that'll be Monday at 11 a.m. So I want to wish everybody a wonderful year. It should be a healthy year, really, really a healthy year. We need it, and we should have good leadership. We need that also, and all over, and we should have a Shana Metuka, a sweet year, a good, wonderful year for everybody. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Where was that Mishnah with that they blew shofar in the...
In Sukkah. That's a Mishnah in the fifth chapter in Sukkah, which is, by the way, the Masechet of the Temple. A lot of the temple laws are described in Sukkah. We know Sukkot had more sacrifices than any other day. And of course, one of the Shalosh Regalim. So that, they used to blow the shofar every single day. Yeah, but so shofar is connected. We think of it only of Rosh Hashanah, but it was really a daily occurrence in the Beit HaMikdash.
And the Chatzotrot are only connected with Moshe, right?
Yeah, I didn't discuss that, but the Mishnah says when they blew shofar in the temple, they blew the chatzotrot with them. Shofar ma'arich v'chatzotrot mekatzer. The chatzot, in other words, the shofar blower tiki would be longer, but they actually blew even on Rosh Hashanah. What I also forgot to mention, the idea of prayer, is there's a debate in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah what the shape of the shofar. Should it be, you know, the spiral shape or a nice smooth thing? Smooth represent we stand before God erect. It's a more confidence like tekiah. The bench, the round shofar, we're bent over. How can we approach God? We're nobody. That's the old, this is an inherent tension. It comes up everywhere. You know, do we say the greatness of man, man's a nobody? That's the tension we live with all the time. And if you're in enough of my classes, you know I'm into this. Tension, Shnei Kivim Machshavim, says there are two things that contradict everything in life. As tension, there are two sides to everything. So we have to, that's why it was so much like what Rabbi Walpert said about the end of the first two chapters in the Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah, one talking about we're going to violate the Shabbat to make sure Rosh Hashanah is on the right day. And they were, no, who cares when Rosh Hashanah is? Rabbi Yeshua, I'm going to make you violate Yom Kippur because I decide when Rosh Hashanah is. It's amazing. So we live with that tension.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, any other questions?
So
I think somebody wants raising their hands. Yes, I believe.
Not a question, Rabbi Jay, but I just wanted to say, following on from a different shiur, Chazon Malavani was talking about Mesinai Nigunim and so on. And I sent you
Yes, I just saw it. I didn't get a chance to open it. I saw
it just before,
So and I appreciate your staying up very late in the morning to come to the shiur from England.
I'm working on Tzachi Tzibor Ve'emunah, putting together the list of piyutim we're going to omit and piyutim we're going to say for our shul. So you've given me chizuk as I do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We should all be for a year with, when we say on the Tana Tokev, boy, we have things to think about.
Yeah, that's what I said. On the Tana Tokev this year, we'll much more powerful. Yeah.
Did I get you correctly?
I'm listening. I think
saying that Bekesed is the Yontif which doesn't have an explanation. Is that, did you say that?
I'm Kesed, sorry, I couldn't quite hear what you said. I'm sorry.
My question is, did you imply that Bekesed Leyom Chagenu implies this is a yontif which the Torah doesn't explain? It's hidden.
Right. In other words, it's hidden. Tikuba chodesh shofar bekesel yom chagenu. That's how the rabbi. Now they explain by the moon is hidden because in the first of the month the moon is very small. But I'm sort of expanding that. In other words, the whole holiday is hidden. What Rosh Hashanah is about is all hidden.
Is that your chiddush? Because
is that my chiddush? Sometimes it's hard to know. I always like to quote sources directly when I know directly. Other times it's just sort of, from all over the place. So I'm not aware of anybody who who says that directly. I can't tell you what book I read that in, but I'm imagining I picked that up from my amalgamation of learning over the years, you know, so, you know,
it's beautiful,
you know, but yes, but it's clear. You look in the Chumash. So why do we very clear why there's Pesach, Sukkot. Yeah, it's a debate a little bit why Sukkot was God's of glory with this, but we know why there's Sukkot. We know why there's Shavuos. We know everything, but we don't have a clue what happened on Rosh Hashanah. Which means, and if we don't have a clue, even if the rabbis explain why, the fact that the Torah doesn't write it, it's already telling you something. In other words, when the rabbis explain, you always have to ask yourself, well, not if the rabbis are right, maybe that's what the Torah means, but why did the Torah say that? So there's always a deeper lesson there. You always have to analyze not just what it says, why it says, what the Torah leaves out and what it leaves in. That's the, and we'll talk about it sometime. Torah is poetry, the last mitzvah. The Torah is a shira. It's a poem. And in a poem, what's left out is often more important than what's in. And the rhyming and the language and the style is just as important, is just as important as content in the Torah. And that's why, you know, when two things are next to each other, well, how do we know what we do on Shabbos? Because the laws of Shabbat and Mishkan are written next to it. Who cares if it's written next to each other? No, that's what it means. It means how you write something, how you say it is as important as what you say. That's clear throughout the Torah all the time. So the fact that the Torah tells us nothing about Rosh Hashanah already tells you something. You know, it's on purpose. The Torah tells us nothing. The Torah could have said, Zeh yom tchilat masecha, like we say in the Machzor. It's very nice to say in the Machzor, but you have to understand that with the Bilat. But the Torah itself doesn't say that. I hope I answered your question that way.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
You said seven represents a completion of a cycle. So what is the completion of the seventh month?
That's the whole point. There isn't. That's the chiddush of the Torah. In other words, since there's 7 days and 7 years and seven, so the Torah said we have to observe the seventh month. Seven became always important, right? And seven are holidays, Pesach and Sukkot, the main holidays. You're right. There's nothing inherent. That's the whole point. There's nothing inherent about the seventh month that makes it special. Oh, it's Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Now, it's not a coincidence the Torah put Yom Kippur and Sukkot in the seventh month. And if you think, I didn't talk about this at all, but Yom HaDin is the middle of the year. This also, it's a beautiful thing. You don't give a report card the first week of school because there's nothing to report on. And you have a report card at the end of June is meaningless because the year's over. You can't do anything. So the best day to give a report card is the middle of the year. The first day of the seventh month is the exact day of the middle of the year. Forget a leap year, you know, but there are 12 months in the year. So the first day of the seventh month is the midpoint of the year. That's when Rosh Hashanah is. It's also a beautiful idea. Right? The beginning of the year is the middle of the year. I always like to say when I teach this, you know, what do I mean? The new year's on the seventh month. So we live for the Canadians, and I recognize a few Canadians on board. For the Canadians here, I said it before, July 1st, our Canada Day, you know, is on July 1st. In other words, we celebrate Canada's birthday. It's a new year for Canada on the first day of the seventh month. We also celebrate our people. January 1st gets celebrated, and Rosh Hashanah. We have also a lot of New Year's, you know, and when the Leafs lose every year in the playoffs, next year we'll have a new year for the Leafs to lose again, you know, for those, you know, who follow hockey. Those who live in Toronto know very well what I mean. Okay, so, all right. Any other questions? Happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much. Okay. Laila Tov and Shana Tova, and we look forward to seeing you, like I say.